When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And I'm going to continue on with a little bit more about this whole redemption character thing. This is Redemption Characters Part 2. It's on my mind a lot because I'm currently developing a project with Sarah Turner, Knife Man of Cricket-Press.com, MLATComics.com. And I think I've explained some of our development strategies in the past, is, but just in case I haven't and in case you need to be updated, we looked at it in terms of Sarah was going to design the heroes, I was going to design the villains, and we were going to meet up again and discuss what we've got and see if we can find a premise and theme out of that. And as it happens, we had a meeting last week, or beginning of this week, maybe. I can't remember now. This last couple weeks have been a real whirlwind for me. But in any case, we had a meeting after I got back from Washington, D.C., and it worked out. It worked out to where we found the theme and the premise just by comparing and contrasting the characters that we had built so far and comparing what our initial thoughts on what the story could be. So that's neither here nor there. That's just part of that wonderful, wonderful experience of working with a fellow cartoonist who is extremely talented and smart. Highly recommend it. Find an art buddy who is really talented and smart, because they'll fill in for your own deficiencies and inspire you to come up with even better ideas than what you had set out for. I know there was a tack that I was on in my notes when I presented them to Sarah. She was like, I don't really like that, but I like this other thing you said. And when she explained why she liked it, I was like, yeah, you're right. That other idea is much better. Has a lot more, juice in it, a lot more legs to it. But this particular story, I wanted very much for one of the villains to be a redemption character. And in order for me to write this redemption character effectively, I felt I needed to really dig in and unbox and understand what makes redemption characters work. Now, I'm going to do something unusual for Thunder Punch Daily. I'm actually going to throw in a caveat at the top of this. Normally, I don't do this because it's my show and I don't have to make any apologies for what I say. But in this particular case, I know I haven't gotten to the full bottom of this, but I did have a little bit of a lightning bulb moment that helped me understand them a little bit better than I did before. And I wanted to share that insight with you guys. And it actually occurred to me while I was in Washington, D.C. and while I was watching the TV series Avatar: The Last Airbender, which I just talked about on the Thursday edition of Art and Story Extreme. I think the title of the episode was Earthbenders. So you can listen to that for a little bit more of my enthusiasm about that particular cartoon series. But in that series, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's a character by the name of Prince Zuko, and he is a really good redemption character. And really thinking hard about what the writers were doing with his character throughout this three-season cartoon series helped me kind of come up with a formula for thinking about redemption characters. Now, these formulas are more of a basis for meditation. They are by no means a recipe. There are no recipes in writing. We all know this, but it always should bear repeating. This formula, as I'm about to describe it, it was more or less of a kind of a diagrammatic way of me to begin thinking about my own redemption character. So without spoiling anything about Zuko, what did they do with his character that's interesting? Now, I talked about Dinobot before, and I think Prince Zuko is in many ways very analogous to what they did with the character Dinobot in the Beast Wars cartoon series. And what did they do? Zuko starts out the series thinking that he is one thing. I am a prince of the Fire Nation, and I have been dishonored by this thing that happened to me in my youth, and I have to capture the Avatar to reclaim my honor. That is not spoiling anything. That's in the very first episode of the series. And it permeates the whole first season of the series, is this whole quest for his own honor. Actually, it permeates the entire three seasons, this quest for honor. And it got me thinking, okay, so Zuko thinks he's this. His belief, his whole self-definition is this, that I am this guy, and this is what has been taken away from me. This is the bad experience that I had, and I have to take such and such actions to reclaim my identity as this. So in other words, I am A, and something has been taken away from me so that I'm no longer exactly A. And in order to go back to being A, I have to go on this quest to capture the Avatar, okay? But throughout the series, he gets presented with a B option. And I'm not going to say who presents it to him. I'm not going to say how it's presented. But the B option is sort of what we as the reader, viewer, participant in the story, what we perceive to be the better choice. If Zuko would just relax and let himself be B, he'd be a better person. He'd be a happier person. He'd be more, more at peace with himself. And the interesting thing they do in the series, and they did, again, they did this with Dinobot, and I hinted at this in the Redemption Characters episode a couple episodes ago, is that about midway in the series, he starts trying on that identity a little bit. And it's not a good fit for him for some reason. Why can't he pull off the B identity? Why can't he become the person that we all know is the better person to be? Well, it's because, and this is where Sarah is so brilliant. I mean, I don't say this just because she's my friend. I say this because I really do think that there is an absolute brilliance in the simplicity of how she puts things. I've talked about this before. Sarah knows how to distill everything I say in 20 words in one word. But when I was talking to Sarah about this, she said, yeah, he's got to get over it. Whatever it is that was taken away from him in his A identity, he needs to get over that in order to become B. But here's the thing. By getting over it, he isn't going to become B. He's going to become a new identity, which is C. And what's the difference between these three identities? A is what the redemption character thinks that they are. They're arguing for their limitations. This is what I am. After all, I'm a Fire Nation prince, and as a Fire Nation prince, this is what is expected of me, and I'm trying to get back to being that person again. And then they get confronted with the B persona, which is them as they should be, at least in the eyes of the reader, but they can't be that because that's not who they are. The C persona is them growing into this new persona, which is a little bit of B and a little bit of A. It's acknowledging the positive aspects of who they thought they were, you know. In other words, by getting over what his limitations were, by stopping arguing for his shortcomings and acknowledging that certain aspects of his A persona are the ones that are acceptable, and while there are some that are unacceptable, he can now move closer to B. But C is someplace in the middle, and the C persona is a much more sophisticated and well-rounded and truly human persona than either A or B. A or B are the opposite extremes. A is them as they shouldn't be. B is them as they should be. C is them as they could be, as they really are, as we are, full of good and evil, dark and light, self-contradictions, and etc. Just as anger can be a positive thing to use every once in a while, we can't completely obliterate anger. Well, you know, some spiritualists will say that you can and you should. But for us everyday humans, there are times where anger is appropriate. Like, for instance, there was, without going into too much detail, there was one moment in my life where I perceived that my wife was actually in danger. And I was on the third floor of an apartment building, looked out the window and saw her being cornered by somebody. And man, oh man, I flew down those stairs and my body was just on fire because I was not going to let anything happen to my wife. I was full of anger. And I put myself between me and that guy. I put myself between Anne and that guy as quick as I could. And now I didn't punch him in the mouth or anything, but I just got her out of the situation as quickly as I could. And it was my anger that propelled me forward, my fear and my anger of something bad happening to her that got me down there so fast. Okay, I'm not an athletic guy, but I somehow found the speed. So, you know, negative feelings can be a positive thing in certain situations, and that's what makes us sophisticated, well-rounded, and interesting people. We are not just good or just evil. And even in a kid's story, like Avatar The Last Airbender, you can have a character who grows into C. And when Zuko does grow into C, and I won't say when he does it, because again, I don't want to spoil anything, it's really elegantly done how they do it. But I'll talk about Dinobot, because this series is Beast Wars is a bit of an older series, and I won't worry so much about spoiling it because I've talked about it so much in the past. I know I've practically spoiled the entire series. To use Dinobot as a sort of a example of what they did with Zuko, And so there's parts of the story in Beast Wars where Dinobots, he says constantly in the series, "I am Predacon," meaning he's with the bad guys. He was bred as a Predacon. He was born as a Predacon, and his entire life up until the Beast Wars series, he was a Predacon. And there are times where he acknowledges that he doesn't fit with the Maximals. They present him with all these options to be good, and there's even this episode called Guerrilla Warfare where Optimus Primal gets all nasty and goes crazy and starts beating everybody up. And at the end, and at first, Dinobot thinks this is a great thing, but then he realizes that this isn't appropriate for Optimus. It's only appropriate for characters like him who have this really deep, darker side. And in the end of the episode, when Optimus is being cured of this disease he had that was making him go crazy, Optimus wakes up in his chambers and there's flowers next to the bed left by Dinobot. So Dinobot acknowledges some of the good, but he also acknowledges his dark side as well. And it's only when he is presented with the opportunity to do a good thing by doing something really brutal and vicious. Brutal and vicious is a relative term in terms of a show like Beast Wars. It was a kid's show after all. But it was using both of them together that made him become the C persona. So I, in my blast of inspiration in the hotel room, I jotted down these notes, and you'll see it in the post, the picture that I took of from my notebook, is that A is they, the character, as they argue for their limitations. I am what I am after all, and I can't change. This is who I am. B proposes a better way, but it isn't the right fit for the redemption character. And C is the complex and layered us, full of contradictions, flawed, but in full ownership of our potential. And that, I think, is a very long way of saying what makes, in my mind, a redemption character interesting, is that they become a metaphor for us, acknowledging the light and the dark in a new way that is full of positive impact on the world. The negative impact comes out of their own self-denial and trying on personalities that don't fit. It's not true to you, right? So, and again, to point at what Sarah said, you just got to get over it. They're a character who has something they got to get over. And man, oh man, that was an unlocking moment for me, is that I figured out what character of the bad guys that I was designing, what character I wanted to be the redemption character, and what was going to be the redemptive act, and what it was that he had to get over. What was the thing that happened in his past that makes him say, "I am just this after all"? And I'm not going to share that here because I'm not so sure how open I want to be about this yet. Sarah and I are going to work out a plan to sort of open up our process for working on this book and document it and share it through Art and Story and through other means, to just for the pure purpose of just sharing information with people and getting double duty out of our content. But until I confer with Sarah on this, I don't know how much I should be revealing just yet, because knowing what which character is the redemptive character and what it is that is going to be the redemptive act, I don't know if that's going to give away something of the story that we're not ready to give away yet. So I'm not trying to be coy here, everybody. But one final thought on that, on the redemptive act. It is my personal belief at this particular point in time, and I may change my mind in the future, but is my particular belief that the redemptive act does not necessarily have to be a self-sacrifice. That is indeed what Dinobot does. Dinobot, in the final episode of that he appears in Beast Wars Code of Hero, he expends his last drop of energy to remove the device with which Megatron could destroy all of time and space. Prince Zuko, on the other hand, his redemptive act is in a simple speech. And it is beautiful. It is so lovely how he does it. Now, there are other like more action-y redemptive acts that he does in the story. But the real, I think, turning point for his character is in a phrase that he says in the series. And again, that's not spoiling anything. That's not going to ruin anything for you. Because when it happens, oh my gosh, it's a couch-jumping moment for sure. So if you do decide to watch this whole series, and I hope you do because it's really good, watch for that moment. You'll know the one I'm talking about. It's really good. So what I was driving at here is that it should be a climax of your story, in my mind, but it doesn't necessarily have to be an action, a physical action that they take. Like we think of the jumping in front of the bullet kind of thing, which is a very powerful redemptive act. But it can also be as simple as something, a situation where the redemptive character is presented with the option to do something terrible and they just simply say, "No, I won't do it." And when they say, "No, I won't do it," because this is, again, pointing at Dinobot, where he has the opportunity to fully work with the Predacons again, but in order to do that, he has to kill Rat Trap, which you, having watched the whole series, you would think that he's been looking forward to this, but he can't do it. That it was another minor redemptive act on his part, and that simple lowering of his sword. It's a quiet thing, but it's a powerful thing. So that's the kind of thing I'm going to keep my eye on in as Sarah and I develop the story, is how can I explore that that moment of redemption for this character in a way that is a plot climax, but not necessarily an action. An action in terms of, you know, doing something, you know, spectacularly physical. How can I do it with a word choice? How can I do it with, you know, writing a letter? You know, in one of the Ayn Rand books, Atlas Shrugged, Hank Reardon writes a simple letter that reads, "I have met him, I don't blame you." And that was a powerful turning point for the character's evolution in the story, was those simple words written in a letter. He wasn't even present in the scene, but it was a very, very powerful moment in the story. So keep your eye out for that if you're playing around with this too. And I will be sure to document this process as I look for this as we develop this story that we're working on. And I'm very excited about it, so I will no doubt be talking about it more in the future. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz of jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for your support of this project. We couldn't do it without you. As I've said before, you guys know what it's like when you get validated for something that you've worked really hard on and something you've invested a lot of your life and time and energy into, a lot of your personality into. And we know what it's like to work alone in obscurity and really not know if anybody gives a darn. And the fact that you guys continue to subscribe is a very, very loud way of saying that we give a darn. And you know how good that feels. That's how good you're making us feel. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, as always. And, speaking of thanking you, there's more stuff to check out in the forums. If you haven't yet, go to the Art and Story forums, because there's some really cool challenges going on. There's the zine challenge that has been put forth by Jono Demophon on the Twitters, and Zach Bosteel. They recently threw in some new challenges about this whole process of making a mini comics zine out of one sheet of paper. And Jono posted a video of how to actually build the actual book and then try to make a complete 8-page story. There's some really cool posts going on in there from a bunch of the different Art and Storyers. So do check that out and see if you can find the time to participate. As soon as I can, I'm going to participate, because it seems like a really interesting creative exercise. Also, there is the Art and Story Supreme Challenge, where we're just taking simple phrasings, simple creative thinking exercises, and trying to create an image out of it. That one's spearheaded by Bob Learned and Dave Anderson, and it started out also with Roger Langridge, and there's some really interesting stuff going on there that if you're looking for a quick way to jumpstart your creativity, I highly encourage you to go there and check out what's going on. There's some neat stuff that'll get your brain working, and we invite you to play along. So, okay, I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. Thanks again, everybody. Until next time, remember...
Today, Teela made a mistake, but instead of trying to correct it, she ran away. That was an even bigger mistake. Making mistakes is part of being human, but punishing yourself or quitting because of it is no way to make things better. The right thing to do is accept your error and try not to make that same mistake again. That's a lot smarter than running away. Until our next exciting adventure, goodbye for now.